Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from north or south, or from the east or west? My heart is filled with love for all of these. I only know I swell with pride and deep within my breast I thrill to see, oh glory, paint the breeze.
Started to work on the Yamashita Gold to try to locate it.
And also, the Marcos theft of billions of dollars of American foreign aid money that he laundered. Let's see, who else was born today? Oh, Cecil Beaton, famous British fashion prop and photographer of the royal family, was born today. And here, and then we have several actors. William Bendix was in several movies. He was born in 1906. He had that New York voice. And then here's a guy who emigrated legally from Canada, from Nova Scotia, served in the U.S. Marine Corps, and in both his hands were blown off, Harold Russell. And he was in the movie along with Frederick Mark, and I forgot the other guy's name, and it was called Best Years of Our Life. Great film, won the Academy Award, about how returning servicemen from World War II try to readjust to civilian life. There's another great film out of that era called The Men, starring Marlon Brando, who was in a wheelchair, and is one of his first films. Let's see, who else was born today? Oh, Andy Rooney of 60 Minutes. He does the commentary at night, 1990. He was also a war correspondent during World War II. The guy is pushing 90. Can you believe that? And here is a Japanese militarist, a bodybuilder, also an author, and a homosexual. Yukio Mishima was born today in 1925, and he tried to get the Japanese, they're called defense forces. He had his own paramilitary army and was into all this bodybuilding and homoeroticism. I think he was married also, but that doesn't make a difference with a lot of these people. Anyway, he tried to get the contingent of the Japanese army to revolt and restore the emperor and all that other samurai Bushido nonsense. And he ended up committing the worst type of harikiri, where he injected, plunged the sword into his bowels while a Confederate would cut off his head at the same time. It's horrible, horrible. But that's, you know, that's that lifestyle in military Japan. And then Bonnie and Clyde was born today. Faye Dunaway was born in 1941. And then another sleazy woman, Sidney Biddle Barron. I don't know if she knew the former governor of New York, who's now on CNN. I talk about celebrity criminals. Mayflower Madam, Sidney Biddle Barrow was born today. So, yeah, that's guy Elliot Spitzer. I don't know why. I mean, would they put Al Capone or John Gotti on as a commentator? It's just unbelievable. But considering the things that the media is doing today, how they're doing is the big lie about the Tucson shooter, and they've ignored Charles Whitman at the Texas Tower. We have people who say they're historians, and things are, they live in an area where these things have happened. And since the year 2000 up to 2008, there have been, in the United States alone, at least 14 of these crazed killings. The last one, most recent one, was the Virginia Tech, the Korean kid. And then we had one, I think, one of the universities in New York, in Illinois, excuse me. And then this Canadian who is the head of the chancellor of the University of California, Bignaru. He's from Ontario, Canada. And he doesn't realize or remember that I think it was 14 women were shot by this crazed gunman in Montreal. And then, of course, in Quebec also, the assassination of Pierre Laporte, who is a government minister, provincial government, that's state government to us. And what Pierre Trudeau was the prime minister at the time, and he sent in the Canadian army and put the whole province of Quebec, which is bigger than just about all comparable American states, and he put them under martial law. So that was a big shock to Canadians, who were generally pretty laid back. Let's see, who else today? Oh, yes. Now, among the deaths today was Lewis Carroll, the guy who wrote Alice in Wonderland, and that was the pen name of Reverend Charles Dodson. A lot of people don't know that. Great actor, Caine Mutiny, and many films, Safari, To Have and To Have Not, with Lauren Bacall. Her name was actually Betty Bensky. Humphrey Bogart died today, 57. When his last great film was about an anti-boxing film, The Harder They Fall. He played a guy who was got a sports writer who got involved with an Argentine bull who was supposed to throw a fight, and he didn't, and he was just beaten almost to death in the rings. And it was a damning indictment of the 50s, during the 50s, of boxing. And I think it was Humphrey Bogart's one of his last films. He also served, I believe, in the U.S. Navy in World War I. And then today, one of our favorites, and we've got to honor her, Jeanette MacDonald, who made this song famous. Let's just play it. I couldn't resist. Where is she? Where is she? Where is she? Uh-oh. She's supposed to be here. I know we... here we go. It's her birthday today.
He's lost it. I'd like to see Burley's face when he hears about it.
I'd like to see the faces of all that gang.
Well, here's to Supervisor Norton.
How do you do? Here is your lovely one saying I wonder no more. Father, today's the morning, make me love you man. Tell me you're the heart of all the golden dreams. San Francisco, welcome me home again. I'm coming home to God, hoping now. San Francisco, open your golden gates. You let no stranger wait outside your door.
Norton around. Tell him I'd like to see him.
With me, I'll send you right to him.
The film also starred Clark Gable, and it was about the Barbary Coast, which is also San Francisco, back during the mid and late 1800s. Great film, great vehicle for Jeanette MacDonald. She used to sing with Nelson Eddy, and he played the Canadian Mountie. Happy birthday, Jeanette. And some other interesting birthdays today, interesting events, rather. Deaths, excuse me. Margaret Leighton, great English actress. She was died today. Anthony Eaton, who served in World War I, like a lot of the British upper class. He was an advisor to Churchill during World War II. He, after Churchill resigned because he was practically gaga and when he was 90 years old and died in 1965, I remember that famous funeral. I think it was Anthony Eden who became Prime Minister, Conservative Party. He was responsible for some duplicity involving the invasion of Egypt over the Suez Canal. It was a disaster for the British and the French, and he was forced to resign. I think they had Harold Macmillan, another of the British upper class, also Conservative. I think he became Prime Minister. And then Ray Kroc, all of you who love McDonald's and Chicken McNuggets and the fish, I always thought the fish was great. Ray Kroc, who my dad knew, I didn't know him, he was born today, and I told my dad when he mentioned that he had Ray Kroc lived in the same neighborhood in Chicago, and I said, why don't you buy some stock? Incidentally, the first McDonald's, as we know it, not the McDonald's, the McDonald Brothers down in San Bernardino, California, which is where Ray Kroc got the idea, also in San Bernardino, California, was Taco Bell or Taco Hell, as some people call it. Ray Kroc brought the idea. He was selling those ice cream machines and... not Miracle Whip, but I forgot what it was. Anyway, he looked for a place in Illinois in the suburbs that were booming at the time, Des Plaines, Illinois, where I grew up. And he set up the first McDonald's there, and a little outside of Des Plaines. And we used to, on Fridays, we hated the food, and we'd try to sneak into town and get a hamburger. I worked there briefly in the 60s, very briefly. And it's still there today. It's quite interesting. And one of the guys who was mopping the floor at the time, later became the chairman of the board of McDonald's. So it's quite a history. And then he later married, I think it was Joan, and bought the San Diego Padres. Quite a guy, Ray Kroc. He played the saxophone. And again, I regret my dad didn't buy stock when it was offered to him. And then, this is interesting, in 1690, talking about musical instruments, the clarinet was invented. And then in 1699, now this is something some of these media morons ought to do. There was a day of fasting and repentance in the Bay Colony, Massachusetts, for wrongly prosecuting witches, so women accused of being of engaging in witchcraft. And then in 1799, a lot of people only know Eli Whitney as the inventor of the cotton gin, which was helping to kill slavery, which was a dying institution. Anyway, he also got a contract for 10,000 muskets from the federal government. I don't know if he produced them, because of the famous names that come out of that period of American history, the gunsmiths were Colt, Remington, people like that. And then also in 1864, this is something that a lot of the diehard Southerners, Daughters of the Confederacy, would like to forget. Sherman began his march to the sea and ended up burning Atlanta. And, of course, getting back to Clark Gable, if you've seen that film with Clark Gable and Vivian Leigh, Gone with the Wind, we see the burning of Atlanta. Now, one of the reasons that the color is so outstanding was they did the frames one by one instead of they discovered that the early color films that were made were done were developed in one shot, apparently, and you just I don't know the exact technique, but when Mankiewicz had the film developed for Gone with the Wind, the frames were done individually. It was quite an undertaking, and they're so well preserved even today, so they were able to bump it up into the Super CinemaScope and all of that, and the color is just outstanding. And then this is not very well known about the U.S. Supreme Court, which at this time came down with Plessy versus Ferguson, which was that the U.S. Supreme Court decision that said blacks could be separated from whites, but the facilities had to be equal. Well, in 1879, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that on trains there couldn't be segregation. So this is interesting. And then in 1914 on this date, Henry Ford developed the assembly line, which revolutionized manufacturing and automobile manufacturing forever. And, of course, we're back to what's happened in Michigan, which apparently has a worse financial situation than even Illinois, which is next door. And then in 1960, those of you remember when Elvis Presley went into the Army, and his birthday was in January, he was promoted to sergeant in the U.S. Army. Then in 1967, important date, the New York Times disclosed or published the fact that the U.S. Army was engaging or accused of engaging in secret germ warfare testing. So we're going to get to getting back to the Army and one of the biggest, what Time Magazine 1950 called most corrupt city in America, and that was Phenix City, Alabama. Now, the significance of this, the book that came out, The Triumph and Trials of Phenix City, Alabama, was written by Margaret Ann Barnes. She died recently. There was a two-way interview that I did with Ken Thompson, who served on the USS Ranger. He was a disc jockey. He was from New Jersey, a nice guy. He was one of the people who contacted the Navy about the Steve Nary case and told them all things were going on, and then they contacted me in January of 1967, and I've been working on this case ever since as the legal liaison and investigator. And we did this interview about Phenix City, and I'll get into why Phenix City is so important in American history, because out of the guy that cleaned up Phenix City, Alabama, was an Army JAG who had come home, John Patterson Jr. His father had run for Attorney General of Alabama, was assassinated by the crooks in Phenix City, and next door was Fort Benning, Georgia, and soldiers used to come over. They would get rolled. Their cars were stolen, taken away. They were thrown into jail. Some were killed. And only during World War II, General Patton was briefly there, and he had some problems with Phenix City. They used to arrest his soldiers on trumped-up charges. And he once said, if you don't release my soldiers right away. I'm sending my tanks across the river, and I'm going to blow your town to hell. The soldiers were released. So here I will get into more Margaret Barnes and the importance of Phenix City, Alabama, because today a lot of people think, political cognoscenti think, that San Francisco is the most corrupt city in America. Now here comes Margaret Barnes.
Margaret has put out a book, The Triumph and Tragedy of Phenix City. It deals with soldiers' rights who have been violated back in the 50s, and we're going to talk about Steve Mary's situation, where it is now, what is going to happen. And Peter, Paul, and Margaret Ann, first of all, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Margaret,
hi,
you
Margaret.
Are
yeah.
All righty. Well, we have both of you on. Now, Peter, Paul, get us up to date on what's going on, because I understand Steve's trial was supposed to start in March, and again, I guess it's been pushed back to sometime in June.
Right. It's because we filed, I did the work for Steve. He filed it pro per because he can't afford a lawyer. He's a poor boy. The court, we asked for an injunction against the state court to block trial because Helen Ann, the district attorney, has major conflicts of interest. He had business, HUD business deals with PFRA for like 8 years. And so I put that in my complaint and filed it under Steve's name. And so the state court decided to push the trial further to June 21st, and we're still trying to block it because we say they don't have jurisdiction because there's also extradition fraud. And, of course, Margaret can bring you up to some things because Carl Vinson is named after Carl Vinson, who was the uncle of Go ahead, Margaret.
Sam Nunn.
Right, the senator.
Senator Sam Nunn, yeah.
Right, and so, you know, it's kind of interesting because now all this stuff is starting to come together in the strangest way, because the reason I got a hold of Margaret Ann, is because she wrote this book, and I'd heard about it, and I was very interested in what were military men who were serving in the South or stationed in the South, what happened to their rights, and we kept hearing all these stories of abuse in the 50s and the 40s, and now here Steve Neri, who was born in Mississippi, and his parents currently live in Arkansas. In fact, that's his current state of residency, ironically, because he never registered to vote in California, never got a driver's license, so by the law, he is where his parents live. That's his domicile. And so here's a son of the South being abused in the North, so things have really come full circle.
Margaret Ann, you want to comment on, first of all, let everybody know about your book, The Triumph and Tragedy of Phenix City, and basically what it dealt with, and then we'll bring that connection into Steve Mary's story.
All right. The Tragedy and Triumph of Phenix City, Alabama, is about political corruption that was so vast that the criminals, actually it was the Southern Mafia, gangsters and cutthroats that had taken over the government in Phenix City, Alabama. And this Phenix City is across the river from Fort Benning, Georgia. And when the period that I write about is up to 1954, when they had a cleanup of Phenix City. Up until that time, the soldiers and citizens and everybody had their basic rights suspended because these people ran the police force, the courts, and the governing body.
And this is during the George Wallace era?
Before that. This was right before George Wallace.
Okay.
And what they did is that the soldiers coming over from Fort Benning, they were lured by girls and gambling and all this sort of thing, that these gamblers would roll the soldiers. They beat them with chains and had spiked brass knuckles. And when they were being abused like this, then they would sometimes kill them and throw them in the river. And the base could do little about it except put it off limits, you know.
Now, okay, the servicemen would kill the people that were trying to roll them?
The servicemen were being killed.
Oh, they were being killed, okay.
Yeah, and what they would do is that they would give them knockout drops, like mm-hmm. you're talking about.
Right.
And then they would take their money, and they also would do the same thing with the prostitution. There was prostitution, white slavery, everything in this little town, and it had been this way for 100 years because the vigilante code had just passed on from father to son. But then they not only controlled that, but the voting did. And a man named Albert Patterson ran for attorney general on a platform to clean up Phoenix City. And they tried to first steal votes, but they didn't steal enough. And then they tried to buy them. Then they tried to steal and change the totals. And then when that didn't happen, they were caught stealing, changing the votes. Then they said, "Stop him if you can, and kill him if you have to." And so Albert Patterson was assassinated on the streets of Phoenix City. And what happened was is that they, with the attorney general elect assassinated like this, then the governor sent the Alabama National Guard, General Walter Hampton, and he went over and they had to declare Marshal Lee, and it took Marshal Lee to clean up this town, and it had gone on for years. And now, of course, the soldiers are not threatened with that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it took this giant effort to do this.
Now, a lot of the soldiers that did go over there, they were warned basically just by their own people over there in Fort Benning, Georgia, their superior officers, that these types of things were happening. Did that cut down on it?
No, it really didn't.
Well, because I know I was in boot camp myself, and it just didn't matter. I mean, they would tell us not to go into Chicago, be careful, Rush Street.
Right.
You know, there's a chance you could, and always told us to travel, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 at a time,
yeah.
You know, to make sure that we were covered, we were in a pack.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is what some of the soldiers tried to do, too. But what was astonishing to me about this little town is that in the 1940s, they were taking in $100 million a year in the town of 29,000.
Wow.
And I just couldn't understand why the Chicago mafia or New York mob hadn't come down to this little southern town and taken it over.
Mm-hmm.
I asked about this, and they said them boys was too tough. They just literally get away with anybody and everybody, and thought they could keep on doing it. The soldiers were their primary target, because when payday came, the soldiers would cross the river to come over
mm-hmm.
to drink and to visit the
women.
Women, right. Mm-hmm. And then what they did, they just set up, and they were just brutalized. It was so bad that the Secretary of War, Stimson, when he saw the reports that were coming in from Fort Benning about what was happening to the soldiers, he said this was the wickedest, Phoenix City was the wickedest city in America. And then later, General Patton was training his troops there at Fort Benning, and he was so mad about it, he threatened to take his tanks across the river and mash Phoenix City flat.
Wow.
But because it was, so many politicians had been bought off, it went all the way to the State House and then some in some ways to Washington, that they really couldn't enforce. Well, they could stop this killing and maiming of the faith.
Wow, that is absolutely incredible. It's a little town of 29,000 bringing in $100 million a year, most of it illegally through prostitution and gambling.
Yeah, they didn't even have a tax base.
Wow.
Because there was no industry.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who lived in Phoenix City had to go across the river into Columbus to work in the cotton mills.
Well, I'd love to get a copy of your book, and I'd love to read it and also talk about it with you in further detail. Now, Peter Paul, stick around. We're going to take a quick break right here, and then we're going to get into what's going on as far as Steve Narion. For you folks that, you know, anybody from around the valley, you know the story. Basically, Steve has been in prison now, or actually San Francisco County Jail, I should say, for better than 3 years, right, Peter, as of
right.
what, March 26th?
Going into the fourth year.
Absolutely an incredible story. We will talk more with Peter Paul from Veritas and with Margaret Ann Barnes, writer of The Tragedy and Triumph of Phoenix City, Alabama, when we come back on Sports Power. Stick around.
And all the girls say I'm pretty fly for a white guy.
Five skins, not a bad front nine. What about you, Mark?
I took the other four.
Hey, buddy, where are you going?
I've had enough for one day. I think I'll stick to miniature golf. This game's too frustrating.
Can I offer you some advice?
Yeah, go ahead. It couldn't hurt.
I felt the same way when I started playing. Man, was I pathetic.
You're telling me. Mark hit thin shots, heavy shots, and had a slice of concern corners. Then I gave him some advice.
He told me to go to Merlin Golf and have a set of clubs custom fitted for my swing. And he was right. The difference in my game is like night and day. I wouldn't play with any other club on the market. In fact, I would have given up the game if it were not for Merlin Golf.
Do you think Merlin Golf can help me, guys?
Merlin Golf can help anyone lower their scores and start playing like a pro.
So come on, let's finish this round.
No way. I'm going to Merlin Golf right now to get fitted for my own set of clubs. I'll meet you guys same time, same place next week, and we'll see who ends up with the most skins.
Merlin Custom Golf Clubs fitted for performance.
I hope you at that time of your life.
And they come with a money-back guarantee. Merlin Golf. Call 836-1404.
Every Sunday, the Anderson family comes together to enjoy a wonderful, hearty family dinner.
Mother, may I help with the dishes later?
Yes, indeed.
And to help build closer bonds, each member of the Anderson family, from youngest to oldest, eagerly participates in the preparation of this hearty family meal.
Let me help you, dear.
Careful, that's heavy.
Oh, boy.
Of course, you're not an Anderson.
Uh-oh. That's why Pizza Hut is introducing the Big New Yorker Pizza. The really big pizza with a really small price. It's 16 inches of delicious New York-style crust, dripping with cheese, and a new tomato sauce. 8 big foldable slices at a price that's very un-New York. $9.99 with one topping. It's the great-tasting pizza that's big enough to feed the whole gang without breaking the bank. In fact, it's so delicious, you may find the Andersons coming to your home. So try the Big New Yorker from Pizza Hut. So much variety. The best pizzas under one roof.
Available at participating locations. Prices may vary. Delivery where available. Whoops.
The doctors at Desert Perry Neal are here to serve the entire Coachella Valley in their hour of need. They specialize in high-risk pregnancies and teen pregnancies. Dr. Robert Eden and his professionally trained staff will assess each situation and assist all patients. Desert Perry Neal has two locations. One at Desert Hospital in Palm Springs and the other at JFK Hospital in Indio. All insurance programs are welcome. If you need their help, call 323-3091. That's 323-3091 for the Desert Perinatal Center. Proud sponsor of Sports Power's Female Athlete of the Week. Sports Fan Radio, 1400 AM. I'm a big fan.
We got 2:25 back here on Sports Power. Ken Thompson, Monday through Friday, 2 to 3 p.m., 3 to 5. Team up with Bob Golic on the Bob Golic Show. And that also Monday through Friday, KSQ 1400 AM, KSQAM.com on the World Wide Web. A couple final scores if you're just tuning into our show. San Fran wins their third straight over Cincinnati 8-3. It was Pittsburgh losing again at home to Montreal, dropping 2-3 now to the Expos. They lose this one 4-3, and the Yankees on top of Oakland now. It is 3-0, bottom of the fifth up there in Peter's neck of the woods. Peter Paul from Veritas joining us from his home in San Francisco, Margaret Ann Barnes, the author of The Tragedy and Triumph of Phenix City, Alabama, joining us. We're talking about Steve Nery's situation. Steve, of course, the graduate 1995 from Cathedral City High School, outstanding basketball player, but more than that, a pretty good kid to everybody that knew him. Never got in a fight a day in his life, according to everybody that did know him, including his principal, his basketball coach, a very mild-mannered kid, a kid that basically got double-teamed, triple-teamed, playing basketball, and still never really got in any altercations. So next thing he knows, he's been in San Francisco County Jail better than 3 years for self-defense, what we're calling it, as far as trying to fend off a gay rape from an elder man, Juan P. Ferrey, who worked for the HUD Foundation, and we now find out Hallinan, the DA from up there in Peter's neck of the woods, was also connected to HUD for a long time, huh? Making donations and whatnot, Peter.
Not quite donations, but the HUD Community Development Block Grant is a federal program that goes that is dispensed all throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
And Hallinan was a county supervisor. Much the same situation that Margaret Ann describes in her book. The book is very relevant. I mean, Mercer University Press is a small press, but they've done a great service in publishing this book and telling us about a period of political corruption that is very relevant today here in California. Because by analogy, similar situation with corrupt politicians protecting very bad people and victimizing people who they think can't or won't fight back. We need to expose this, and I think in her way, Margaret, we always have to look back to history because history repeats itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the victims, they're new victims, but it's the same old scenario with a little different time frame. And I think with people like Margaret Ann, who wrote this book, and Mercer University Press, who's publishing it and tried to get it out, and, like you guys down there in the desert country, who've been constantly talking about this and the fact that we've been on many radio shows, the message is getting out. I'm beginning to hear from people around the country that this is a horrible case, and who else is a victim? It's quite relevant today because our servicemen are possibly going to go in on a land invasion of Kosovo, and we've got to ask ourselves, what are their rights? Who protects the enlisted man? And we see that there are two standards of justice. Captain Ashby, the guy who was flying that plane in Italy, who cut the tow line, the Italians, under this treaty called the Status of Forces Agreement, they had a right to claim that they could try him over in Italy, but it was a prejudiced venue.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, Steve Nery has this same right. He's in a prejudiced venue up here. Just the same, I haven't quite got through Margaret's book because it's so interesting, and I'm going through it very slowly. But I would imagine that in the days that soldiers who were harassed down in Phenix City, Alabama, that they probably got falsely accused of being drunk and thrown into jail and having to come up with bail money and, going and facing a kangaroo court. Margaret, is that a fact?
That's really true. And what these gangsters did to control the city is that they would take their automobiles from them.
Oh, boy.
And they in the gambling, it was all so set up and crooked, and that then they would, and of course they had, dice were fixed and all this.
Mark cards, all that stuff, loaded dice, sure, you name it.
Hold on, yes. And then they would end up with a terrific bail, and then what they would do is they would take their automobiles and hold them until they could pay for it, and they would charge them such an outrageous amount that they would lose their automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls would victimize them?
What's that?
The girls would victimize them?
Oh, yeah, because the way the girls were paid was how many drinks they took. The girls got 50%, and the bartender got the other 50%. And what they would do is order a drink, and the girl would knock the drink over, and then he would buy her another one. What they were doing is as she would send her glass back to the bar, they would put a full glass of water with a teaspoon of liquor on top so that it at least had some odor to it. And these soldiers were paying outrageous prices, and they would get them so drunk they wouldn't know what they would do.
That's what happened to Steve.
Yeah.
So nothing's changed.
It doesn't seem like it.
Now, Peter Paul, as far as Steve's trial now, it's been pushed to June 21st, and what can we expect? Is this thing ever going to go to trial? That's what the people are wondering, because there's always some type of, always some type of roadblock, it seems, or obstacle, and this kid's just, I mean, how is he holding up in San Francisco County Jail? I got a letter from him recently, a nice letter, and I'll return that letter probably tonight or tomorrow, but, I mean, it just seems, you know, I don't know. Does he have any hope of being vindicated? Because, Margaret Ann, what we came up with was, you know, as far as Steve, we both had it down as involuntary manslaughter, far as him defending himself from being raped. And we had always said that if Steve Neri was a lady and she had defended herself against the rape and killed the guy in the process, which we don't know if Steve actually killed Juan P. Ferre, or if, because when he left, he didn't check on his condition. He just knew that he was unconscious or whatnot at the time, and Steve was able to grab some of his belongings and take off, get back out of that place and get back to the base. But if Steve was a lady, we feel that he already would have been vindicated and nothing would have been made of it. I mean, we remember a Lorena Bobbitt who did what she did and basically got patted on the back by every lady in the country. You know, I mean, I know you look back and you laugh at something like that, but I mean, and here's a kid. Just because, you know, he happened to be in a gay community up in San Francisco, he defends himself against a gay rape, and all of a sudden the whole thing's covered up. They never did a second autopsy on this guy to find out if he was HIV positive, which I think it was a good possibility as well.
Yes, it was.
Very likely could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just really awful. It's such terrible injustice. This is why it was important to me to write this book, because it was a case where it became a carriage of justice, the outcome was. And there's so seldom seems to me real cases of justice that I think we need to know about those that did succeed, so that it'll at least encourage people today to try to do something about it, like these people did back in 1954.
Folks, I'm sorry, Peter, just one second. Folks, if you are just tuning in, Margaret Ann Barnes, the book she's referring to is The Tragedy and Triumph of Phoenix City, Alabama, and it deals with back in the 1940s, I guess from 1940s, 50s? 1954, talking about Phoenix City, Alabama, how soldiers would come over from Fort Benning, Georgia, and basically they'd be rolled, they'd be, you name it, they were... taken advantage of, basically.
Sometimes killed.
And sometimes killed and thrown right in the river. And
yes, one thing is that so many servicemen have gone through Fort Benning, because, see, Fort Benning is the home of infantry. And so many have gone through there that I have heard from a great many of people who served there at some point and knew about this. And they can tell stories of this same sort of thing that they witnessed. So people who were in the service, you know, or have been, that this place is widely known as Sodom and Gomorrah, or was until it came down.
Well, you got some rivalry on that, Margaret.
Yeah.
Margaret.
I got some what?
You got rivalry up here in San Francisco. It's a little...
We'll have to end early. A little longer than I thought, and I should have did a tighter edit since we shared the interview and the tape. So we will close with our favorite theme, and we'll be back Monday.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got so much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony. Up to you.
Hey,
Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We got to pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
Well, we were hoping there's some qualified Democrats who wanted to lose, who supported these agendas. Anyway, it's Peter Paul Brazola. Thank you for listening. This stays up on the web. You can access it at your leisure and enjoy it. It's Peter Paul Brazola. Good night.